It's January the 7th, 2022, from the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, the United States of America on God's good, great planet Earth. Thinking correctly is what we're talking about today. And our thinking clearly is the main theme of my focus. It's not a great picture that I have up on my website of my friends. Isn't that amazing? It was around the holiday time, and I loved speaking with each of these men. A particular different insight on how African-American mature men communicate with each other about life. We had dinner around the table together on that Hollywood meal, and it was just a refreshing time. A good time for me to be alive. I would never have thought that after years of being a pastor in the church and having friends that were far different from the friends that I now call my buddies, I'm just thankful to God that life has been so wonderful to me. I cannot help but to think of Ahmaud Arbery, the young 25-year-old black man that was gunned down in that town in Georgia. Well, the verdict came out for the sentencing of the three men, and all of them got life. Only one of them that showed a little remorse for what he did has a chance of parole, but the other two will spend the rest of their natural lives, and possibly the third one, in an institution for the crime that they committed. I feel so sorrowful in my heart because, and I'm fighting back the tears, because I remember when I was 25. I remember that boy's life was snuffed out. I know. I mean, you know, we got people that got snuffed out during the Holocaust. We got people that been getting snuffed out for years. But whenever I think about that, I have to think clearly. And that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. I'm not going to play any music. I don't feel like listening to music. Though K-Jazz here in L.A., for the past few evenings, has been playing some tumultuous jazz, and from some artists, some of the artists I've never heard of, new jazz musicians that are really cutting the rug up, so to say. And K-Jazz, if you can ever tune into it, just go to kjazz.org, and you will hear some good music. I'm telling you, Bubba Smith and the other DJs that play music on K-Jazz, it's very superb music, taking you back to listen to the masters and even some new people. You know, I've been having a running conversation with one of my sons, and I won't mention any names or any details and everything, but what I've been doing, because there is no one at the house here with me that I can influence, you know. From time to time, I had young men. If they didn't have anywhere to stay, I had them camp out in the garage. I gave them some bed clothing out there and the pillows and, you know, get your life together. Think about what you're going to do. They would be allowed to come in and eat, maybe wash their clothes, and invite some of their friends by, but only if they were living a life that didn't cause me any problems. But anyhow, my boys had gotten to the age where, okay, it's time for you to get up and get out of here and get on your own. But I want them to think clearly and rightly about every decision that they make in life, every move that they make, whether it be with a partner or without a partner. I have new friends, and I speak with them. And when I tell them about my background as being a pastor, being someone that has always loved black men, always, I always, you know, this is weird when I think about it. But when I was a kid, I never had a lot of black male friends. They wouldn't let me play on the teams with them because I've never been athletically inclined. I didn't want to play football because I didn't want nobody attacking me and hurting me. I didn't play baseball because I was afraid that if they threw the ball too hard and he didn't throw it right over the plate, it would hit me and I'd be maimed for the rest of my life. So I never was athletically inclined. I played checkers. That's about it. But the dangerous sports, no. So they never chose me to play on their teams. They were always, and I'm just thinking of names now, Billy Buzzy, Charles, and the other guys, and Willie. Man, I thought that I'd never forget his last name. I have. Little Willie, man. They all went to 75th Street School with me when I went there. But I never was the guy that they wanted to participate with me because I was different. I would always want to have conversations about, well, what are you going to be when you grow up? I'll never forget. I was in the 11th grade in David Starr Jordan High School down on 103rd Street before you get to Alameda, Jordan High School. And I was in the main building. It was the sixth period class that I had, because when I went to high school, they had six classes that you took. And it was my last class, and it was an English class, and we had a black female teacher who had white hair. She was a senior, and we greatly respected her because she respected us. And I recall sitting at the window, looking out the window, a summer day, me and the young man there were waiting on the class to come to an end. Now, I know that the sound is going down. I can't help that. I hope it comes back up. But I want to share this with you, and it's very, very important. So I'm going to wait and see whether this sound comes back up because it's going down. So you guys just turn the sound up so that you can hear me. Okay, here it comes. It's flowing back up. It's something with my system. But anyhow, I was sitting at the window with this young man that was also in the 11th grade with me, and the sun was shining in the window, and we both put our left hands on the windowsill as we looked out. We had one of those kind of desks where his desk faced my desk, and we were looking out in the main street, 103rd Street, and we were looking at our hands. And I remember the conversation because I said, you know, I wonder how our hands are going to look when we're 30 years old and 40 and 50. And we moved it up and up and up and up. And when I got to 70 or 80, the young man said, John, why are you doing that? Nobody lives that long. And I told him, yeah, I don't believe that. I believe that if we take care of ourselves, and if we live right, that we can basically not speak life, but if you live a life, like I said on my last webcast, if you live a life of integrity, then God will treat you well and you will be able to live a prosperous, continuing life in that way. I'm just upping my volume over here because I don't want it to go out altogether. You know, I'm working with the SoundForge system, and sometimes it does that. And so what I'm doing is I don't want to stop this and restart the webcast all over again. So I do apologize if there's a little interference, but you know what I'm going through. I'm pushing the system to the max. Okay, it's coming back up to itself again. It's acting reasonable. So when I was looking at my left hand, I said, I wonder how I'm going to look. Now I'm looking at the same left hand, and 77 going on 78. I've made a lot of decisions in my life to do certain things. Every decision that I made in my life had to do towards me moving on in a successful way to meet the needs of my agenda. And that's what I try to share with young men. I try to share with them, you want to make sure that everything that you're doing is meeting the needs of your said agenda, because that's where you're headed. That's what you're working towards. That's what it's all about. And I said, only you, when you become an adult and a mature adult at that, can make that decision, and nobody can make that decision for you, and no one can take you away from that decision. I was telling this young man today and yesterday, the decision is yours if you're married. I said, if you're married and you're the man and you know exactly what it is that you're supposed to do in order to get ahead, and if God has given you certain insights into you getting ahead, even if it means that you have to move out of the environment that you're in and move into another one. Look at one of my boys, Morio, and I use that term boys in a very affectionate way. He's like a son to me, Morio Canto. He spent over 13 years in this home with me. That's right. I remember when he graduated from Western Lake College. And then when he moved out with his girlfriend and moved way out in the desert community up there, and that didn't work. Lost everything that he had worked for and came back here. And then he started going to Santa Barbara, University of Santa Barbara up there, UC Santa Barbara. And that's where he got his bachelor's degree. Since then, he's written two books. Now he is writing a history book for a large part of the nation of Papua New Guinea. All right. And he is going from village to village, getting the history from the elders in the village and putting it down in writing, sharing with them educational systems for their children, transforming their lives. This was his dream that he came to when he was in this home with me, because I said to him, you choose what you're going to do in life. I'm not going to choose your career. Oh, Morio had good jobs working for the city of L.A. He was helping homeless people get shelter. Morio would stay overtime in the office and work in a very special way to help those people. And I think he lost his job and got in trouble because the people that ran the facility said, no, man, you got to lock up. You got these people in here an hour after it's time for you to go home trying to give them help. They said, that's not what we hire you for. Morio said, oh, man, if I'm not helping nobody. Now, Morio didn't know that he was quoting an old church song that Adele Bishop used to sing in the church. If I can help somebody as I travel on, if I can bring some laughter in this world of woe, then my living shall not be in vain. Then Adele would take it up. Oh, my living will not be in vain. Those are the kind of songs that we used to sing. And when the boys were here, that's what I was putting in their heads. This last guy that I was speaking to, he said, oh, man, you think I wasn't listening to what you were telling me? You think I wasn't standing in the hallway door listening to you as you do those webcasts? And you was talking to the people that you didn't even know was listening in. Because if you check out my website, I don't have account down here. And so wait a minute, I'm going to have to ask him, does he mind being on, because I'm doing the webcast and I really don't want to lose my focus. I'm in the middle of a point on my webcast. Can you call me back in about 45 minutes or what?
Just one question. She wants to move to a city that's 3 hours away.
Okay, yeah. I think I told you about that before, and I said that is strictly your decision. Strictly your decision. When I finish this webcast, go and listen to it. I think it's going to be something on there that's going to help you. I'll get back at you.
All right.
Now, See, and, you know, that goes to prove a point. I still got young black men listening to me. See, a lot of people think, oh, well, he retired now. He ain't doing nothing. What he doing? No, I'm still doing what God told me to do. See, I'm on my journey, and I'm thinking clearly about the journey that I'm on. And my role is to help black men think clearly about the journey that they're on. I'm glad that those three white fellas got convicted and got life because they snuffed out a black life. Think about all the black lives that were snuffed out, not by only whites, but by black people also. What about the black people that snuffed out the black people? You see, this saying works in both ways. We have to not only come to a point in this country of respecting, man, there was a clip on Facebook somewhere that I saw today of a lady that was obviously hungry. And this man came up to her and said, let me buy you lunch. And the woman was so thankful that the man had bought her lunch that she kept kissing his hand and thanking God for him. But the man helped her. And then I saw another man help a black man who was homeless, sitting in the streets, looking all dirty and everything. And I think I told you about this months ago. I would make that turn on Slauson and Rimpaw, coming south on Rimpaw. And there used to be a black man setting up against the wall. And he would have a little bag, a hamburger or something in it, where people would buy it for him and drop and let him have it. And I said, man, that young man needs a shower. And I was going to bring him in the house here and let him shower up and everything. But I had to think clearly. I don't know anything about that man. The young man that I had staying in my home, we had time to converse about what I was trying to do. A lot of people had me wrong. A lot of people think, oh, you having those men in your house because you take an advantage. No. You can't take advantage of a grown-ass man that don't want to be taken advantage of. Did you hear me? You see, in paving out my journey, I don't try to take advantage of black men. The system has already done that. Just like if you're a white man living in your community, I'm thinking about a guy, I won't mention his name. I went to Oklahoma and did a Basics of the Faith retreat when I met this white guy and met his wife. And he was heavily involved in helping the people in his community that happened to be on dope, strung out on methamphetamines, crystal meth, and shrooms and everything else. And I just heard from him on Facebook a couple of days ago. So I'm not the only one doing it for my community. I think that each of us live in a particular community, and we need to look out for the people that really deserve the help. I'm thinking about a young man that came here that knew one of my best buddies, Don Ross. He came from around the Muskegon, Michigan part of the country, and he came out here, brought his family out here, tried to get his life on track. He was working out here. You know what he ended up doing? Moving right back to Michigan and trying to make it back there. Because, see, coming where you think the grass is always looking greener on the other side is not necessarily the best side. It's getting rough in California. Let me give you an example. I had to go and pick up my mail at the post office because I hadn't gotten no mail in about 8-10 days. Come to find out from one of the supervisors there that your mail wasn't delivered because we can't get nobody to deliver it. Why? These young men don't want to walk the street tonight. It's rough trying to make money when they're only paying you so much money a month. And that money is not even enough to keep your family with food on the table and in an apartment house. Most people I know now, and if I went outside in front of my house right now, when I moved on this street, not only could you get 3 cars in my driveway, which you can still get in there. And I remember because when my children and my wife was here, Leslie drove a car when she drove her and Delia to UCLA. And My wife drove a car, and I drove a Dodge van. I can get that all in my driveway. Well, now, and then when it was that way, there was parking all in front of my house, all up and down the street. Now you look out there, it is bumper to bumper cars, block after block after block after block. There's so many people in this city living with each other. They're converting their, hardcore, what you barking at? They're converting their houses and garages into living spaces to give people a place to live, because L.A. has filled up to the brim. Get him, Hardcore. Hardcore knows when I do my webcast, he has to protect me. And I hope he does. And I hope nobody tries to come in here on me, because if they do, they're going to be sorry that they did. But anyhow, I don't want to get off the point. I'm thinking clearly about what I'm doing, what I'm telling these young men. Those of you that are up in age like myself, we all have a responsibility to work in our neighborhoods, to work in our community. One black man told me a couple of days ago, John, you keep talking about community. We ain't got no community. Yes, we do. It is what it is. The community is what it is. And we have to work with those in our community in order to keep that community healthy. We don't need an organization to do it. We need to have the internal fortitude, guts, if you will, to look at young black men and women now, too, because there needs to be black women. Black women are leading in the jobs and everything. You need to talk with these young women. Tell them to stop flaunting themselves, their selves out there for sexual benefits and money like that. If you see a woman, but one man told me, he says, man, have you been on Figueroa lately? I said, Figueroa? What am I doing on Figueroa Street? Mm-mm. He told me, John, if you went on Figueroa, if you wanted to have an affair with any kind of female, you can find them there, because they walk on the street scantily dressed, and for $20 or $40, they'll do anything you ask them. I said, I wouldn't demean nobody like that. No. Now, I said, those girls need a skill, and the man told me they got one, and that skill is to be there for other men. When that society goes down like that, when the neighborhood goes down like that, and in some of these cases, these are the children of black people that used to own property, excuse me, up and down the streets that they're frequenting, okay? But if we think about our journeys and think about the positive, denotive things that we can do to make our lives better, there's a few that's going to get it. Because I believe that when a boy turns into a man, when he matures into a man, that God has placed in each and every one of us the ability to work and to want to work and to provide a living for our children and for our family, for our loved ones. It brings me back to think of a couple of days ago when that apartment burned down in Philadelphia and those 13 people lost their lives. Men, women, and children lost their lives. How sad that is. But people are living up on top of each other. All the city officials went there in Philly trying to figure out how could something like this happen. Easily, man. They're burning everything to try to keep the place warm. It gets cold at night. It gets cold at night here in Los Angeles. Oh, believe you me. And I know that it is cold in those streets out there. But regardless of how cold it gets, regardless of how difficult it gets, we have to think clearly about every part of our journey. If you're homeless, if you don't have a roof over your head, well, John, maybe I can come and stay with you. No, that's going to handicap you. I want you to listen to these webcasts and ask yourself this question. If God was for John, and back in the day, you know, I was telling somebody today, when Lucy and I first got married and we moved into our first apartment, I didn't have any furniture in that place for 3 months. We slept on a pallet on the floor. Now, if you don't know what a pallet is, it's some very thick blankets, like a quilt, two or three quilts. We had a pillow for me and Lucy. We didn't have a heater in the floor. We had a heater in the wall. And this is after I married her. For 3 months, we slept on the floor. Didn't have a stove. Well, how did we cook? One of the ladies at the church gave us a hot plate, an electric hot plate. And Lucy would go to the store and buy a little food, and I'd come home from working as a warehouseman for the city of L.A., and that's what we ate. We had that. I bought a whole apartment full of furniture on credit from Gold's Furniture on East Washington Boulevard. I think that was before I got to Alameda, where Gold's Furniture was. It was a Jewish ran business, and I remembered Lucy and I had gone down there and picked out the new furniture, and when they delivered the furniture to the house, they delivered us some of the stuff that had scratches and things on it. I told the truck drivers, put it all back in the truck and take it back. And to that man, I paid good money for brand new furniture, not something that other people had and got it all scratched up, and now you're going to send it to me. The man called me after the truck came back with all the stuff on it, and he said, why did you send it back? And I said to him, sir, I'm not going to get into that conversation with you. I think you know why I sent it back. I said, now, my check, the first down payment check didn't bounce, and I know you can take me to court, but I'm going to give you a second chance to do it correctly. See, I was speaking like a white man to him. I didn't get on that thing and cuss him out. Why you send me all this scratched up thing and stuff like that? Same thing. When I bought the wedding ring and the engagement ring for my wife, I went there to Mayor's Jewelers. They know on Manchester and Broadway. It was on Broadway, not on Manchester, but it was about just south of Manchester, about maybe a block and a half. Mayor's Jewelers on the north side of the street. Little Jewish man, because Jews ran everything. They were running all the businesses. Didn't have a lot of Korean business here. As a matter of fact, I didn't know what a Korean was back then. I couldn't tell a Korean from a Japanese. But I went in there, and I was going to marry Lucy, but before I went in there, let me tell you about this. I was into music, wanted to sing. Me and Beaver and Ross and Richie Baby had a singing group called the Four Speeds, and I needed a tape recorder. They didn't have cassette tapes. They didn't have 8-tracks. All they had was a reel-to-reel. It was white in color, and it was plastic. And it had a 7-inch reel, and I wanted that tape recorder. And I asked the owner of Mayor Jewelers, how much is that? He said, $150. Now, $150 way back in the day, 1964, that's when that was. I got drafted in 65. That was a lot of money. And I said, well, I don't have all the money. And so he said, well, get your daddy to come down here with you and co-sign, because I had a little job working at Jim Products, Sherborne Press. And he said, bring your daddy down here. And I'd have him co-sign. And I dropped my head. He said, what's wrong? I said, I'm 20 years old. I said, this ain't going to be my daddy's reel-to-reel tape recorder. It's going to be mine, because we're going to write some music, and we need to record it down when we rehearse, because I'm going to be famous one day and do lyrics for music. That's what I told him. And the Jewish man said, you are, I said, yes, sir, I sure am. See, I had respect for everybody. He owned Mayor's Jewelers, and he owned all that stuff. He showed me his little stock room in the back. He had boxes, and a lot of these boxes had never been opened, you know? Boxes had never been opened here. Boxes of stuff that he ordered. And so he said, well, son, you're going to have to bring your daddy in. And I said, no, man, I'm going to have to walk up and down this street and find somebody that's going to sell me something on my good name. And he looked at me and said, son, you serious? I said, I ain't never stole nothing. I've always kept my word because my daddy taught me that. And my daddy's a sharp dresser, and always his car is looking nice, and we living in my daddy's house with him. That was before I got my draft notice. He sold it to me on my word. I think I was paying something like, what, $10 a month, something like that. Back in the day, things weren't that expensive, and we could afford it. Well, of course, I get drafted because Vietnam is flaming, and they start drafting all the blacks and the Mexicans and the poor whites from the inner city that couldn't afford a college degree. What do they call them? Deference or something, what they call it. I wasn't going to college, so I got my draft notice, and I got drafted in the Army. I did my 2 years. Thank God I survived it. Now listen to the story, We're talking about integrity and the journey and thinking rightly about everything that happens. I went in the Army and I forgot about the tape recorder. I wasn't making the payments because I was stationed in a lot of places, Fort Ord, California, Fort Gordon, Georgia, and then, of course, in Louisiana, Fort Polk, Louisiana, and because I had to go to three forts to get advanced training, I became a radio teletype operator, and they sent me to Seoul, Korea, the capital city of Seoul, Korea. I was a radio communication specialist. That goes along with me with the tape recorder and everything, right? So I do my 2 years, and I get out of the Army. And I come back to L.A. and I want to buy some other stuff because I got me a job at Jim Products. And I said, oh, yeah, Mayor's Jewelers. And I went down to the shop. I went down to the shop and I said, hello, my name is John Coleman. I bought something from you years ago, and I believe I owe you something on the tab because I want to buy some more stuff from you. As a matter of fact, it was Mayor's Jewelers was the place that I bought a wedding ring and my wedding band and my wife's wedding band and my wife's engagement ring. I went to the same jewelry store to do that, and I said, but before I do business with you, I want to pay a bill that I forgot I had, and I hadn't been back in Los Angeles for more than 6 months when I met Lucy, and I had to get married. You guys don't understand. Back in the day, you had to get married. That's how you showed your legitimacy, whatever you was going through, because you needed somebody to help you make it, especially living in this megalopolis city like Los Angeles. So the man said, what's your name? And I told him. And he said, I'm looking at my Rolodex, and I don't have you on file. I said, because I was delinquent. I went to the Army. I got drafted, and I stopped making payments, and I'm here to pay off my debt. So what he did is he walked in the back room that he still had back there, and he brought out this old Rolodex filing thing. And he said, John Coleman, 204 West 118th Street. I said, that's where my daddy lived. I said, I'm no longer there. I'm now living in a different place, 5606 West Venice Boulevard. You don't have that on record. because that's after I got out the Army. So he said, son, what are you here for? I said, I am here to get a wedding ring and an engagement ring for my wife, and I'm going to buy one for me, too. As a matter of fact, as I make this webcast for you folk right now, I still have the wedding ring on. I gave the other rings to my daughters after their mother passed away. Yes. He looked at me, and he said, he gave me the price. I forget what it was. He said, that's what it was. And I took my wallet out of my pocket, peeled off the money, and gave it to him. And I said, wait a minute. There's an extra $10 for the pain that I caused you in record keeping. This is before computers came out, people, that I'm doing all this in 1967, because I got out of the Army in 1967. And he said, well, I'll be damned. I said, why? He says, I've never had anything happen to me like this. Oh, and of course, I forgot to tell you, at that time, God had made a tremendous impression upon my heart to live by the word. That's why my email is Into the Word, because the Bible was the book that kept me grounded for all of my life, that gave me integrity. The only reason that I'm still doing this and lying preachers are dead in their coffin is because they did not have a love for God nor his people, nor wanting to live a life of integrity. You may say, oh, man, you didn't have to pay that. You could have gone to another jewelry store and got the rings and didn't have to. You a fool, man. That Jew didn't need that money. It's not the point whether he needed the money. I was on a journey to create integrity into my life. The same thing happened when I bought this house back in 1974. I had served my time in Sam's Army and got out. And what did the VA do for me? The VA said, if you are looking for a house, young man, after you serve your time and was honorably discharged from the military, we will let you buy a house for no more than $500 down. That's what I did. I'm in the same house. Since then, I've had it remodeled a couple of times. I've painted it. You've seen pictures of it all around here. This is God's blessings to me, and it can be yours, young man, yours today if you follow God the way he desires you to follow him. If you make the right decisions and think with a clear, clear mind about everything that you do. If you look at your journey and make sure that that journey is all for the praise of God's glory and has nothing to do with elevating you, he'll bring you through everything. Sure, I've had sorrowful moments. One of the sorrowful moments in this Lucy Coleman studio where I am right now, my wife came to her end as she laid in a bed in this office right now and was dying when I called the ambulance to come and get her. And they took her, and she never returned here alive again. I remember it. I did the eulogy. Oh, yes. I've gone through terrible times when my daughters were stricken with an illness that we didn't know where it came from. But God resurrected us back to the place where we needed to be. And what did I do? Did I become a selfish old man? Trying to hoard a $10 bill here, a $20 bill there? No. What I did is I said, Lord, make me a blessing to black men. And I think that if every black man that is a senior citizen has the capacity to do that, he can do it, and we can rebuild a community that's been torn down through dependency of a system to hail us as supreme. I've never been on the dole. They gave me an EBT card because my Social Security wasn't bringing in enough money for me to pay all my bills and everything. So EBT gave me about $40 a month, something like that, for food. I buy potatoes and onions and things like that. During the pandemic, they upped it a little bit to help me out, and I appreciate that. But being on the dole, asking them to give me money because I never could work for a living, no, I've always worked. That's why I became a professor of philosophy. I said, wait a minute. I got these degrees in philosophy and degrees in theology. Why can't I teach philosophy in college as an adjunct? I didn't want to become a permanent professor. As a matter of fact, when I quit, a position opened up, a tenured position at the college that I spent most of my days teaching. Man, one of the professors, I forget his name, he said, John, did you know that they're getting ready to hire a tenured professor? Because I took one professor's place that had died, and I took most of his classes. And man, every class that I taught at the first of the semester had about 45 students, and I ended up with no less than 35 at the end of the semester because I could teach, and I had an affinity with my students, and I still have an affinity with some of them. Why? Because I thought clearly about everything that I did, and this principle is based upon how you do your life, how you do it. Now, I don't know when I'm going to leave here in death. Sometimes I think it's going to be tonight because I feel these sharp pains in my chest area. So I have to make sure I'm eating right and taking care of myself. But I get excited about the things that I see coming on black people in the black community, and I take it seriously. And I don't want to team up with other black men, because most of it, at the end of the day, is just talk, and nothing is being done to bring about a resolution to the problem that's facing me. Let me end this up, because I don't have to talk an hour. I want you to think clearly about the journey that you're on. Now, what God's going to do is he's going to speak to your mind, brothers and sisters. But listen, my dear sister, if you have a brother, you're his helpmeet. You need to help the brother. The sisters have put their, this is what the sisters say now. I make more money by myself and my baby without him. Yeah, that sounds like a forfeiture of the black male during the slavery times when mama dear wants to become the house negress to kiss up to, you know, the man and cast her man aside. We can't have that. We got to go back to helping each other out. This is good. I'm just drinking sparkling water. Let me say this. If we do not support each other as a community, and I mean support each other, I better not waste this stuff. Okay, there we go. If we do not help each other or support each other as a husband and wife team, shame on us. That man gave you that beautiful baby girl. He gave you that beautiful child for you to dress up pretty like. Don't worry about it. Things are rough, and it's going to get rougher before it gets tougher. I told Lucy when she married me, and, you know, she wasn't too happy with the career that God chose for me, because I didn't choose to be no pastor. I didn't choose to be this. I wanted to be like the other boys. I wanted to, as I told you, I wanted to play baseball. I wanted them to pick me on the softball team, the kickball team, dodgeball team. They never chose me. They saw I was different. I used to sit on that bench and wait for them boys to choose me to play on their team. Oh, let me tell you this story. You won't believe it. I was a 10th grader in Jordan High School. Jordan High was down on 103rd, right before you got to Alameda Street. And Will Rogers Park was, and it's still there, right down the street on 103rd and Central. Will Rogers Park was one of the first parks in Watts that had a swimming pool. And one of the coaches at Jordan High would take us boys in the 10th grade down to the swimming facility at Will Rogers Park. And I'll never forget, he said, "How many of you can swim?" And the hands went up and he says, "Go ahead, jump in the pool and swim around." And there was about five of us boys that didn't learn how to swim. Our daddies never put us in the pool. And the coach said, "Mr. Coleman, you don't know how to swim?" I said, "No, sir. I'm afraid. I don't know how to stay afloat. I keep sinking. I tried to." He said, "Oh, yeah?" And I said, "Yeah. You know what the coach did?" He said, "Come here, boy." I walked up to him. He put his arms around me. Man, it was a bear hug. He was holding me, and he says, "Now, you know," he didn't say, "I love you," nothing. He says, "I got you, boy. Hold your breath." And he jumped in 10 feet of water. I remember it like it happened yesterday. And I said, "Oh, whoop, whoop." And I held my breath like he told me to do. And we went all the way down to the bottom of that thing. My feet hit the bottom and I held my breath. And the coach pushed up and we got floating back up. And I breathed. And then he said, "Now you go down to the 4 feet of water and you just keep doing that to get used." He said, "The fear will leave you." Now, some people would look at what coach did and say he was wrong for doing that. Did he have your parents' permission? You could have breathed in and drowned. And that, no. It was a man looking at a boy that was going to grow up to be a man. And what he did is he took it upon himself to teach me a lesson about life. Boy, you ain't got to be afraid of nothing. You can do what these other boys do. Let it come out. Unfortunately, my dad never spent time with me and did me like that. But coach did it. Other people did it. And that's what I do in a young man's life today. And I want to put out the clarion call for a lot of black mature males that are over 40 years old to get with it, damn it. Get with it. Or we going to lose the beautiful community that God has given us. Those of you that got homes, apartments, condos, got a little extra money, you go and talk to that sister that got some boys that live in that condo with you. They ain't never went fishing. Ask her, "Can those boys come by and watch a movie with you and you can show them something about nature, about life, to help them. Give them a chance to be the best that they could be in their hearts and in their minds. Damn it, we can do this." But as long as we put out in their minds this kind of a thing where, "Well, you need to, you know, be careful of this nigga, because this nigga gonna do you this way and that nigga's gonna do you that way." Look, I know that it's a term of endearment when spoken correctly amongst us as a people, but please, some of our brothers just want to be known as men. Think of Ahmaud Arbery. Think of him. He was exonerated today. I know the lives of three of the men are wasted because of the inappropriate decisions that they made 2 years ago in the life of a 25-year-old black man. Think about all of those young black men that are dead. But think about this, that it is black men killing black men in our own communities. And instead of us being outraged, we must do something. And what I'm proposing right now is what you're doing. I'm not talking about building no dreams. I'm not talking about no dream maker. I told every young man to stay with me. I don't know what you're going to be, damn it, but I know this, you're not going to be up under my ass all your life. I said, because God made you a man, a black man at that. I got a Filipino guy that comes by here, and he said, "John, can I be one of your boys?" Man, that That made me feel so good, boy. Ooh, look, until I was speaking with a relative of mine that told me that this relative of mine had two children like I had two children. They had two sons and I had two daughters. And he told me that his son don't even speak with him. And out of the blue, my cousin, the youngest one from my daddy's brother's family, called me and said, "It's been too long, John. Let me see if I can read this and so you can get a picture of what he said to me. And then you will understand how important it is to have the right kind of conversations with the right kind of people." Oh, here it is right here. Here it is. Here it is right here. John, then he gives his name. "I'm your cousin here. Hope that you're doing well. I just got an email message from your Into the Word email asking if I have an Amazon account." Well, that was the people that had hacked my email today. So if you guys got that, disregard that. And then he says, "I know that scammers attack people's email account around this time of the year. I wanted to know if you sent it." Then he says, "Also, I always wanted to take a moment and listen to this. And I haven't spoken to this cousin of mine in years. I want to take this moment and genuinely thank you for doing Mom's memorial service 5 years ago and how moving it was. Listen to this. For everyone, I'm sorry I haven't been in contact in a while. I've been busy raising my now 13-year-old son, and then my cousin told me I'm 65 now." See, it's been years. Then he says, "keeping up with our currently homeschooling him." And see, because he and his wife, and they're both very highly educated, took him out of the public schools because they want their son to be accomplishing things. And final pushes on some career issues, plus some health issues. Kidney stones, he says he has. "Again, I hope that you are doing well." I responded back, and he responded back and says, "Great. I'd actually been thinking about you lately and how I just wanted to get together with you one-on-one at some point and just catch up." Then he says, "Your life has been a long and incredible journey, and I've always admired your tenacity to keep going." See, I was amazed that he said that to me, and I said, "Oh my gosh." Because people know who I am. Now, you young men, listen to me. They know who you are too. Regardless of what people may say or how they may respond or react towards you, you have an obligation to live in such a way that it brings nothing but the best of glory in the lives of other people. Oh, that humming that you hear in the background is my heater. I have it on a thermostat, and when it goes down, it's that metal cooling off because it's warming up in Los Angeles. My goodness, I paid my gas bill. That thing was $93 because that's what it takes to keep an old man's body warmed up or thawed out these days. Hey, I had a wonderful time. I had no idea that I was going to talk to you this long. I just so hope that your life is doing well and that the year 2022 brings marvelous, marvelous turns in your twisted journey, because all of our journeys are not going to be alike. They're going to be different. They're going to be difficult, but you have to be cautious. You have to be insurmountable in your ability to accomplish the things that God has given you to accomplish. In this life, you will run into people that will treat you decently and love you. And on the other hand, you will run into people that will not care for you. They will not like you. They will not play softball with you or kickball because you're different. But don't become indifferent towards them. Become this kind of a person. I like it the way that Jesus put it. I don't know whether Jesus said this or not, but there's a saying, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I don't think that any of us would like anyone to treat us poorly, not to give us a helping hand when we needed it. And God expects us to do the very same thing. Okay, 55 minutes and 38 seconds on this webcast. I've been talking all night long. Thank you for coming to my website. And thank you for praying for my health and my care. I would hope that you would remain healthy also. Eat better food. Don't eat all that grease. Stay away from the fattening food. Exercise on a regular basis. And whatever you do, take some time out to talk with your Creator about the wonderful, glorious life that He's given you. God bless you. It's been a privilege.